for listening to the first episode of the As We Podcast. Are you interested in the finer points of the sport that is football? Or soccer, my dear Americans? Great! Then don't switch your channel, don't turn off your smartphone. Just fasten your seatbelts and enjoy the ride. My name is Konstantin Eckner, editor for Spielverlagerung, the number one football blog in the world. Of course, it won't be a solo. At my side this time are two gentlemen that know the business, that know the ins and outs of football analysis, and most importantly, that know how to write and talk about it. First, I would like to welcome Spielverlagerung writer Judah Davis. Judah, how is it going? Are you already excited for the start of the Premier League season this coming weekend?
Yeah, I'm buzzing. I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited. So, yeah.
The third guy on our panel is Tom Payne, well known for his high output on the Spielverlagerung website. Or should I say well known for his highly criticized, long-winded articles. Tom, how is it going?
Good, thanks. Yes, I haven't watched any Arsenal in a while, so I'm feeling pretty happy.
Yeah. So this is the way we're going to do it. We got three parts, like a knockout stage match, two halves, and extra time, including a mailbag section. Let's start right away with our first half and dip into the Manchester Madhouse. That's right, Manchester, one of the capitals of professional football, has potentially become a madhouse. The rivals United and City want to top each other. First, City announced the appointment of new head coach Pep Guardiola. Later, United countered by signing Jose Mourinho, who's somewhat of a Guardiola nemesis. So that alone will be crazy. Since then, many world-class players have arrived. Mkhitaryan to United, Gündoğan to City, Ibrahimovic to United, Nolito to City, Eric Bailly to United, Leroy Sané to City, Paul Pogba to United, Gabriel Jesus to City, John Stones to City. Gosh, I'm already exhausted and excited at the same time. Judah, let me start with you. What should we expect from this Man United side? Given his defensive playing style, is Jose Mourinho of all coaches the right man to rebuild the Red Devils of an atrocious spell under Moyes and Louis van Gaal?
Well, the expectations is an interesting aspect to look at, because I think it's simple, really. Man United and their fans, they consider themselves to be the biggest club in England and one of the biggest clubs in the world. For that reason, challenging for the title is seen as a must. So they expect that every single year. And they know, obviously, it won't happen every season, but in the seasons that they don't win it, they expect a serious title challenge to be mounted. So I think from the fans' point of view, it's quite simple. They expect United to mount a serious title challenge and to add silverware from one of the other cup competitions, whether that's the FA Cup or the Europa League, something like that. In terms of Mourinho's expectations, I expect those to be quite similar. Mourinho, he's spoken about how he's ambitious, he sets even unrealistic targets. So he's going to be aiming to win the league and do as well as they can in the cup competitions around that. In terms of what we should expect from them, I think it's probably a bit less. I think they've added quite a few players, not too many, but in a few very important positions, ones that require a lot of partnerships. For example, Eric Bailly at centre-back is probably going to, he doesn't speak English yet, he's going to take some time to settle in. Ibrahimovic and Rooney up front. Well, obviously, Ibrahimovic is a new one, not Rooney. Ibrahimovic up front, that's one that could, I mean, who knows, he could fire straight away. It could take a bit of time. So I think in terms of our expectations, we should probably expect them to come around second, third, probably a decent title challenge, but I don't expect them to win the title yet. I think it could take quite a while for them to really start firing on all cylinders, really. In terms of the right man, that's an interesting question because it depends on the perspective that you look at it from. I think if you look at it from the perspective of style, which is one that is often debated in the media and that sort of thing, you could say no, because he's considered to be quite a defensive-minded coach. He's considered to be one who doesn't really like attacking, and He likes to defend a lot, counter-attack. On the other hand, though, you could say, yeah, because to an extent, these allegations are quite exaggerated. It's not every single game where he parks a bus or something like that. Once they're playing against teams where they're expected to win, of course, they're going to dominate the ball because the other team are going to be parking a bus against them. So they need to find ways to attack. Perhaps it's not the focus of his game model. It's not the thing he puts the most emphasis on. But he does have some things that he does well in that game phase. So I think in that perspective, you could say yes, you could say no. In terms of the transition from the previous manager, I think that one would have to be a no. I mean, you think about the game model of Louis van Gaal and how that translates into Jose Mourinho, and the stylistic shift is pretty drastic in terms of everything, the positioning in defence, the orientation of how they defend, the mentality in terms of how they press, how aggressive they are, passive, and also in terms of how they attack, their positioning, their all-round dynamic, whether it's dynamic, whether it's static, is quite a big stylistic shift. And that's one of the reasons I think it could take quite a while for Mourinho to settle in. Another thing we could potentially talk about is success and aura, competence. In those terms, of course, Man United being one of the biggest clubs, in their opinion, they expect to have a competent coach, one who can win trophies. Mourinho's track record obviously suggests that he can. He's a competent coach. He can win trophies. So in that sense, you could say, yeah. So I think overall, it depends which perspective you look at it. But I think you could say Mourinho's not a perfect fit, but a good enough fit.
Tom, you've watched Man City's preseason matches extensively and even wrote an article about the early changes Guardiola has made. The piece is up on the main page of Spielverlagen.com. For our listeners, what are the major takeaways from the first month under Pep Guardiola?
Well, the first month has been fairly promising, especially to say the changes which Guardiola will have to make considering the state that Pellegrini left the team in. Towards the end of the season, obviously they did get to the semi-final of the Champions League, but the football was really poor. Ball circulation was slow. As speaking to a lot of City fans, seem to agree with this, the football is just boring, to be honest. You have the players like David Silva who inject that energy into the game, but apart from that, it's fairly sterile. But Guardiola has made some promising changes already. We have seen some improvements both on the training ground and in the friendly matches. The first friendly against Bayern, we already saw a lot of promising things in the build-up play. They occupied the attacking midfielder space a lot better, which was one of the biggest issues of Pellegrini's City. In the 4-4-2, had players like David Silva on the wing, and although he did cut inside off the ball into these spaces, there were no consistent occupation of the attacking midfield. So obviously, without players there, you can't pass through. Another promising aspect of the pre-season and Guardiola's first month has been the build-up play. As we know, positional play, it's very structured. So we've seen some patterns emerging with the full-back on the wing, centre-back going to the side of the penalty area, and then the defensive midfielder, dropping in for support. So we saw that even on the first training session of Guardiola, and also, immediately, I think it was maybe a week after that training session, we saw the exact same play in the Bayern friendly. So can already see the principles of positional play seeping into the team through Guardiola. So that's promising. Their activity in the transfer window has also been good. Leroy Sané has just come in, who's quite a dynamic winger. He will be important for creating a lot of movement in the attack, which was missing under Pellegrini. Players like Sterling, quite static off the ball, just waiting for the ball to come to them instead of creating space for themselves and for teammates. To say how bad the team were towards the end of Pellegrini's time at the club, the first month has been quite promising for Guardiola in terms of correcting these issues and playing, like instilling positional play into the team.
Yeah, let's try an early prediction. Are they able to win the title? And could City finally reach the Champions League final?
Obviously, it's very difficult to say. Many clubs in the Premier League have improved. Obviously, Man United have got a lot more top players, such as Mkhitaryan, into the system now. Like I said, Man City were struggling towards the end of the season. And although the first month has been promising, they struggled against Arsenal recently when Arsenal looked to press man for man high up. They also struggled when Dortmund pressed similarly. So I think they may have issues in the first 2 or 3 months. But I'm sure that Guardiola can obviously get them playing some excellent football. So it really depends the state of the league once they're playing how Guardiola wants them to. It's very possible. I mean, obviously, with Leicester winning the league last year, but the fact that the league has strengthened, especially with Conte now at Chelsea, I don't really expect them to win the league. Maybe finish second or third.
And what about the Champions League?
As for the Champions League, obviously it's a cup competition, so it's a lot less predictable. There's a lot more random things which can happen in the space of one or two games. It is possible, but I think teams such as obviously Bayern, Barcelona, Dortmund, and even some of the top English leagues, English teams, sorry, it'll be a big challenge and probably unrealistic to see them in the final of the Champions League. But a quarterfinal is definitely possible, and perhaps even semi-final again.
Yeah, right. Judah, speaking of the Champions League, the grand stage, United aren't even part of the competition, which isn't a huge threat to the value of their brand. But still, United have lost some appeal in recent history. What could be a right move tactically for Mourinho's part? Does he stick to a customary 4-2-3-1 system? Will Rooney still be an option as centre forward? And who will conduct the attacks from deep, considering expected departure from Schweinsteiger and the fall of one Morgan Snyder along? Really big topic, just so we can get it out of the way.
Yeah, I think a good place to start, and similar to how Tom started, with some of the issues that United experienced last year. Like we mentioned earlier, with regards to the style, United fans demand attacking football. Now, exactly what constitutes this isn't really clear. That's the truth. It's not really clear. But the idea, as the saying goes, is they know it when they see it. I mean, what they saw last year certainly wasn't it to them. So some of the issues that I saw from an analyst perspective was one, similar to Man City, but even worse, a lack of dynamic in attack. Now, this is partly to do with Van Gaal's positional play. Of course, he requires certain positions and zones to be occupied. He prefers a more constant space occupation as opposed to general positional freedom and such, but which isn't really an issue in itself. However, the interpretation, I believe the interpretation from the players was perhaps a bit wrong. Also, obviously, some of the issues are from the instructions that Van Gaal gives, of course, because that's where the players get the interpretation from. But I think their interpretation wasn't quite good enough. And I think that led to a really static attack, really laboured, took long, like it was too slow. So the dynamic is one thing that certainly needs to improve. Another thing is the systematic issues that arose from a lack of synergy between player profiles. Now, I think this one of the clearest ways we saw this was in midfield, really. One of the clearest areas we saw that was in the midfield. We often had Carrick partnering Schneiderlin and Carrick partnering Schweinsteiger, things like that. And the possession game really wasn't effective for some of these reasons, because in possession, Carrick and Schweinsteiger, they like to occupy similar positions. So it leads to a bit of redundancy. And also, when you have one of them occupying perhaps a higher space, they're not quite as effective in that position. So that's one of the major issues that they experienced with their system was, again, the profiles weren't quite fitting each other perfectly. So that's one issue that they had there. Another issue, because it refers more to a defensive aspect, and that's the instinct to man mark that they had a lot. Now, that's obviously something that Van Gaal wanted. At first, it started off and it was quite strong. The defensive system was quite strong. It was amongst the strongest in the league, if not the strongest. They had quite a zonal system, but they had man orientations within that system. And that was when they're in your zone, you pick them up. When they're not, you leave them out. And that leads to a bit more of an element of stability than is the case with a more thorough man-marking approach. But it seemed like from around December, for some reason, one reason or another, it's not entirely clear, but he decided that he wanted to change it. And the points of man orientation were expanded. So it was general, a lot closer to just all-out man-marking. So the compactness, the team, the defensive support that they were able to give each other earlier in the season started to reduce. And the defenders started getting exposed a bit more. Chris Smalling had a bit of a downturn in form. And okay, it's not their fault. It's more to do with the system because they were exposed a lot more than they were before. So yeah, that's one of the things, another thing that he needs to sort out. They have made some steps already in terms of sorting those out. One of the major things that we've seen in pre-season has been an increased dynamic. That's especially the case in the game against Everton, Rooney's testimonial against Everton. We saw general positional freedom from the attackers. The interpretation of the roles was very, very flexible. We had Rooney coming from midfield, moving into higher spaces, rotating with Ibrahimovic. Generally, the positioning was very, very dynamic. It was very, very different to what we saw last year, as opposed to constant space occupation, which of course has its merits. Mourinho prefers a different style. He prefers the players to have consistent freedom, move to create overloads, combine quickly, and then move the ball quickly. So that's one of the steps they've made already. There was an interesting quote with regards to the man marking that Mourinho made recently, where he said that they're trying to transition into a more zonal defence. But of course, these things become instinctive, and especially with that kind of thing where your instinct is clearly just to follow someone in your man-marking approach. He's clearly trying to change the instinct, and he says that way, of course, we can keep more compactness. And of course, that's going to take a little while for them to do that, but that's one of the steps that they've made so far. Another thing is the signings. So the signings of players like Mkhitaryan and Pogba especially, those two especially provide greater press resistance, greater ability to combine and move dynamically through opponents. So greater press resistance, they're better needle players than some of the people that United had last year, which would be vital in allowing them to combine and move through the opponent's midfield, as opposed to just whenever they have pressure, they have to move out of it, and then it's a long, long-winded attack around the opponent's defence again. So those are some steps that they've made really well. With regards to Rooney, I think what we've seen in pre-season is quite a free role. Like most of the players, what we've seen him in particular having quite a free role. Of course, Ibrahimovic is another player who likes to rotate from his position, come deep into midfield. And Rooney's had the license to occupy the space that Ibrahimovic leaves. He's had the license to come into the midfield as well, in which case someone like Schneiderlin or Carrick might move up and occupy the space he has. But also, he's had the license to drift wide and support attacks on the wing. So Valencia, who's been quite linear in his approach, he's set up quite a few crossing situations from that side. But I think this kind of thing suits Rooney, because when he can play with similarly intelligent players who are intelligent with their movement and the way they combine with other players, someone like Mkhitaryan, for example, or Martial, Ibrahimovic himself as well, it can be really good for him. So I think we could see Rooney quite in a good role this year as well. The last question with regards to deep line playmaker is actually very interesting. I think with the expected departure of Schweinsteiger, they have three major options, which are Blind, Carrick and Pogba. Each, of course, have their own merits. Starting with Carrick, he's got very good positional intelligence. He supports the build-up really well. He's good at making penetrating passes to allow the build-up to progress. One of the issues he has experienced recently is, of course, he's getting old. He's 34, 35 now. So his reaction to defensive transitions has become a bit slower. And he has been seen as a bit of a liability in some of these situations. So that's, one question mark against Carrick's name. With his age, you might have to use him a bit more sparingly. Lind, again, similarly good in build-up to Carrick, had a really good role in that centre-back last year, performed very well. It's unlikely Mourinho will trust him there, so he becomes an option to occupy a space and be a deep-line playmaker midfield. I think he could do this well. He does it similarly well to Carrick. I think defensively, and in terms of defensive transition especially, I think he is, in that aspect, superior to Carrick. He is often in position to press the first receiver, slow down the attack, and does that quite well. So I think, in that case, you could make a case for him being a better option there than Carrick. Neither of them are particularly press resistant, but they do use the ball well and occupy good spaces to allow other people to have space themselves as well. So that's another option. And Pogba, perhaps an interesting, perhaps a surprise inclusion here. Most people probably wouldn't consider him a deep line playmaker, but this could possibly be a good role for him. I think at the Euros, what we saw with France, I think that was probably his best performances when he played in the deep line playmaker role, especially against Iceland. He wasn't particularly impressive in some of their opening games, but once he moved into a position alongside Kante, he often was the one receiving the ball from the centre-backs and making the first progression into the opponent's block. And he did some of these really well, made some good passes from there. And I think also the major aspect he has from this role on, sorry, the major advantage he has on Blind and Carrick is that press resistance, that ability to drive forward with the ball, that ability to bypass the opponent's pressure through his needle playing ability. And that could be used to create and exploit space further upfield in the pitch. So Pogba is also an interesting and possible inclusion for this role. I think overall, I would probably use Pogba in a higher role. Use that ability to, again, combine and to bypass pressure with his press resistance. I'd probably use that in a higher role to receive the ball within the opponent's block. In which case, I'd probably partner him alongside Lind and use Carrick quite sparingly in that role as well. It's likely that Mourinho will stick with the 4-2-3-1. That's what we've seen in pre-season. So, yeah, that's what I'm expecting from them. The combinations of Mkhitaryan, Martial, Rooney and Ibrahimovic, who are all expected to start in their positions. So Martial on the left, Ibrahimovic up front, Rooney behind him, Mkhitaryan on the right. That could be a good combination, especially with the freedom and emphasis on dynamic interactions that Mourinho seems to be implementing. It could be really good for those players. So it's possible that we see a really strong United this year.
All right, I think we covered a lot, and that's what we would like to achieve in our show. I think we are done with Manchester for now, but we will certainly come back to the topic sooner rather than later. So let's go to the second half after a short break. Leicester City shocked the world when 64-year-old Claudio Ranieri won the English Championship with a team full of nobodies and has-beens. On Spielverlagerung we covered the rise of Leicester last season, but won't be shocked this time if the Foxes drop down a few ranks. So let's not waste too much time with wallowing in memories. Instead, let's look at a few teams that could surprise fans and pundits during the season. We don't necessarily talk about championship contenders, but about surpassing expectations. Prior to the show, we had a little talk about a few teams with potential to surprise and who should be fun to watch. Our colleague Alex Lawrence mentioned Sevilla, a team that has won the Europa League a million times already, but had to get over the loss of former head coach Unai Emery, who is now in charge of Paris Saint-Germain. Sevilla was looking for a successor, and they found one. No less than Rojo Sampaoli was the man of their choice. Alex is unfortunately not with us today because of other obligations. So, Chuda, what do you think? Will Sevilla turn into Chile 2.0?
Yeah, so as you said, Sevilla had to cope with the loss of a really, really good head coach in Unai Emery. I mean, winning 3 Europa Leagues in a row speaks for itself, really. Yeah, so really competent coach there, but they've brought in a manager who is arguably even better, Jorge Sampaoli, whose Chile side were one of the best international sides in recent years. as we've seen recently, international football, the lower time you have to train and train as a bunch as a group, sometimes results in less cohesion and less tactical strength as a team, as a unit. So it's really good when we see a team like Chile, Sampaoli's Chile. It's really mesmerizing when we see a team like that. When they show such great actions and such collective ability to do things as a team. And so it's really mesmerizing when we see a team that managed to do that on the international stage. So Sampaoli is now moving into club management, as you can see, and should be interesting, his Sevilla side, because his Chile side were really strong with the ball, good positioning, strong possession game, and their pressing work was really good, influenced by Marcelo Bielsa. He's, of course, adapted and added his own spins on it, made it even better, and he can add this to his Sevilla side, you know? In pre-season, we've seen quite a lot, and one of our colleagues on the German site, Edward Schmidt, wrote a really good piece on their pre-season and some of the observations he's seen. I've watched a few of their pre-season games myself, and I've been impressed with some of the things I've seen. Like, the positioning has been a bit more consistent, better positional play, better occupation of spaces, the important zones. They've created width and depth through their positioning. And in possession, they've used quite a lot of long switches in the final third, switching from one flank to the other to create isolations for wingers. In accompaniment with these switches, they've had players running through the half spaces to either create space for the person on the ball or to give them a first-time passing option, so to ensure that they don't get trapped on the wings, essentially. So, yeah, so we can see a bit of Sampaoli's blueprint already, and it will be very interesting to watch their approach. Of course, with Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, there isn't that much scope for them to surprise or surpass expectations. But in terms of being fun to watch, no doubt, they will be.
All right, the next pick is an English team. Tom, who could surpass expectations in the 2016-17 season of the Premier League?
So, yeah, I do think there could be quite a few surprises in the glorious Premier League this year. But one team I think that could go under the radar are Middlesbrough. So they obviously got promoted under Aitor Karanka last year. They're excellent defensively, conceded just 31 goals all season. And if you take into consideration that there's 8 more games in the Championship than compared to the Premiership, then it's really special. Karanka generally has his team set up in a 4-4-1-1, sometimes a 4-4-2 formation around a mid to low block. In defence, they're quite compact. They're not necessarily as compact as, say, a Villarreal, but it's obviously got the job done in the Championship last year. This compactness is probably one of the most important aspects of Karanka's defence. Because the players are so close together, it allows them to support each other, cover each other's spaces when necessary, which makes for quite a resolute defence, especially in the midfield, where both wide men will often come inside and support the near side central midfielder. And I think it was just Middlesbrough and Hull last year who conceded under one expected goal per game in the Championship. I think that's from the stat set Experimental 361. Obviously, I can't really say I have the same hopes for Hull this season after their transfer window. And we all know what a compact defensive system can do to the Premier League, especially after Leicester last year and Watford went under the radar. They were successful in a compact 4-4-2 system. And I know the Premier League is likely to improve this year with Klopp at his first full season at Liverpool, Conte, Guardiola both joined, but especially for the middle to lower ranked sides, I think this defensive system of Middlesbrough can be still quite effective and it could be a real strength for them in surviving and maybe even pushing for a mid-table finish. But obviously I can't be completely positive about a Premier League side. And I think the one thing which could hold Middlesbrough back next season is their play with the ball. You see it with quite a lot of teams. The positional structure is very stretched. Both wings are always occupied and there's a large distance between the two defensive midfielders and the strikers. Because of this, it can be difficult at times to combine in attacks unless they're high up where the winger can join the near side striker in some situations. But instead, they're often forced to more long balls in quite disconnected attacks. And because of this, they can become quite predictable at times. I mean, in the championship last year, they were the lowest scorers out of the top six. And even then, they had to rely on the individual qualities towards the end of the season with Jordan Rhodes coming in as a proven goal scorer, players like Gaston Ramirez in the attacking midfield position. But there are so many teams in the Premier League who already, their attack is largely based on the quality of their individual players. So realistically, I don't see this as the biggest issue for Middlesbrough, and I think their defensive qualities can easily outweigh what they may lack at times in attack.
Alright, we should return to beautiful Spain for a moment and discuss a weird case. Despite losing Eric Bailly, Villarreal have been able to improve the quality of their squad tremendously. For 50 million, they signed Robert Soriano, Denis Cheryshev, Alexandre Pato, and Nicolas Sansone, among others. Everything looked great, but then hell broke loose. The club sacked head coach Marcelinho. Apparently, Marcelinho had held intense discussions with the club on the issue of recent signings. He was unable to clear up his differences with the front office and is now gone. Judah, what do we make of the situation? We actually expected them to perform very well.
Yeah, so as you say, it's a massive shock, the departure of Marcelinho. Had done a great job at Villarreal over the last few years, and it's hard to speculate now exactly how well they're going to do, especially when we have no idea who's going to replace him. As you did say, they have made some major additions to their squad. The addition of Sansone, for example, was a great addition, especially with the loss of Denis Suarez. They've lost a lot of creativity and a player who brought a lot of dynamic to their attack. Sansone can do this and much more, so it's a great signing there. And alongside Pato, it still possessed the likes of Bakambu and Soriano. So it's possible they're still a really strong side this year. And it will be interesting to see what the new coach does, you know, with the system, what he keeps, what he adapts. So they will still be very interesting to watch for sure.
All right, I think we are done with our second part and back after a short break. And now, finally, the moment you've all been waiting for, it is mailbag time. We ask you on Twitter to send us your questions. Of course, we cannot respond to every submission, so we picked a few. Some have sent us questions on things like packing, Raymond Fiennes concepts, or the English national team under Big Sam. We will certainly talk about it in future episodes. The first question is from Chris. He asks, as the masses of high-profile foreign coaches join the Premier League, what impact do you expect them to have on the UK culturally? Judah?
Well, firstly, I want to say that's a great question. And in order to answer that, I want to talk a bit about what I see as English football culture at the moment. Essentially, anti-intellectualism rules. And that's right from the way the media speak about football and how it affects the fans' thoughts on football and what the fans demand has a way of feeding back and translating into what actually happens on the pitch. It is common for people to think things are overcomplicated. Managers and players who try to do elaborate or things that are considered different to tradition are often heavily scrutinized and unduly criticized as well. So I think it's quite an estate, to be fair. What we could see, and what we hopefully see, is that these new coaches and their focus on the tactical and strategic elements and aspects of the game, and the success that they could achieve from this focus, could see the fans and the media start to take a different approach. And the one thing they can't argue with is success. So if their focus on tactical and strategic elements is backed up with success, we could see them accept that kind of approach and even start to look in a bit more detail as to what happens and what exactly leads to their success. So we could see quite a big sea change in terms of how football is thought of in England.
Second question is for you, Tom. Carsten Jahn asks, how do you think will the Euro influence the different domestic leagues? I should add that Augsburg coach Dirk Schuster said in a recent interview with Spox that Iceland could set a trend with their throw-ins and the use of different variations. Is that an aspect where clubs could still improve and create chances in a rather easy way?
So Although the Euro 2016 wasn't perhaps the best display of football we've ever seen, I mean, there were some fundamental issues running through most of the teams, such as the poorly structured and disconnected attacks and the heavily man-oriented defending. We did see some positives from individual sides, and Iceland definitely fell into this category. The use of set pieces as an attacking threat was crucial, considering they didn't really have many other means of creating chances in such a defensive-minded system. And I think some of the lesser-able teams domestically could really take inspiration from this. Well, we've already seen the likes of Atleti and FC Midtjylland make set pieces a consistent threat, so I guess that's proof that it's more than possible. Aside from this, I think we may see teams more encouraged to use the five-man defensive line, especially after the performances of Italy and Wales. Use it to great effect to create a strong defensive system.
Next one is from Sebastian Chaput. He writes, Conte has set up his team in a deep zonal block. How do you think his team will fare in games with default possession at home? Judah, what do you think?
As we saw at the Euros, his teams have some interesting and effective schemes that they use in build-up. I think these could actually be really effective against many of the Premier League teams. The tendency of the midfielders to man mark could create the space that they did in the Euros for them to play directly into the forwards from where they can combine and attack the defence directly. So it's possible they have a lot of success in these games and manage to find routes into the forwards through the man orientation that they come across. One potential issue, though, is how he prefers quite a little central presence. And this could affect their defensive transitions quite negatively. So that could be a potential issue in some of these games for them.
This person says, United seem to want Ibrahimovic to drop deep. Rooney has tendencies to do the same. How do you see it affecting attacking transitions?
I think the positions that they take up in defence will have a bigger impact on the offensive transitions than their tendencies to drop deep in possession. But in general possession play, that could be an advantage even in terms of the style that Mourinho seems to want. It seems to fit with the things that I talked about earlier, such as the flexible positioning, dynamic, and the flexible interpretation of roles. So as long as they are intelligent enough, and I think they are, to fill the spaces that need to be filled at the right times, essentially if Ibrahimovic drops deep, someone needs to fill up the space against the centre-backs and that kind of thing, then it should be fine. And I think it could even be advantageous to the style that Mourinho seems to want to implement.
Okay, all right. Ed Couch Tacticians asks, did you notice any improvements in Zidane's Real Madrid last season? How did he win the Champions League against Atletico with no Rego de Posición? Well, I can answer it myself. Sisu started off struggling with almost the same problems Rafa Benitez had the months before, which means bad spacing and lack of structure and own possession and stuff like that. The team was basically torn into two parts with a couple of attacking players up front and the rest in deep position. He could at least resolve those issues within a few months and started relying on the individuality of his strong players. It wasn't like Real Madrid tore the house down when they won the Champions League. I mean, they beat Wolfsburg and the weak Manchester City team prior to entering the final. The first 30 minutes of their match against Atletico were great, but it certainly wasn't the second coming of Ernst Happel or something like that. I know we talk about strategy and tactics all the time, and without even a decent concept, you have to struggle at the top of the sport, but it doesn't mean that individuality means nothing. Putting a few geniuses like Rose and Modric into the midfield and having some great athletes like Cristiano and Gareth Bale up front can bring you very far, and in this instance, even to an international title. All right, and here are a couple of short questions. Alistair Smith asks, who will be the first manager of the top six Premier League teams to be under pressure of the sack? Personally, I don't think any of them will be under pressure, at least until Christmas. Mourinho, Guardiola and Conte all have been brought in recently and they are big names, so they should have at least one round before doubts could come up. Wenger is basically unsackable at this point. Maybe Pochettino could struggle if Tottenham aren't able to keep up with top-tier competition. But I don't see that really. And are Liverpool still considered to belong to the top six? Because the Reds shouldn't cherish huge expectations, I guess. Next one is from Ibrahim Tambal. He asks, is Moritz Leitner the perfect Iniesta replacement for Barca? As a fan of Moritz Leitner, I say in deep conviction, no, he isn't. But he will do fine at Lazio. Patrick Sinuaria asks, can you make a list of top 5 under 23 box-to-box midfielders? These lists are always tough. Pogba is already 23, so he's out. I would say Mahmoud Dahoud from Mönchengladbach, Saúl Ñíguez, Atletico, Ali from Tottenham, Renato Sanchez, the signing from Bayern, and probably Mateo Kovacic, or maybe Schalke's Leon Goretzka. They are both great. And I guess we finish with this from @box2boxcbre. He asks, who are the most technically sufficient players in the world? I guess he means, who are the most technically proficient players in the world? Guys, who could it be?
For example, Busquets, Sergio Busquets in Barca. He really needs no introduction in this topic and his subject. His positional intelligence is basically flawless, and the decision-making with his passes and the way he delivers them, flawless. So we don't need to speak any more about that. Müller is another one. He's incredible in terms of his movement and the way he links with his fellow attackers is almost second to none. So that's another we don't need to speak much about. Modric is one who, for me, certainly deserves to be considered in this aspect. He is, bar Busquets, for me, the best midfielder in the world. The way he takes the ball out of high-pressure situations, moves away with his needle-playing ability, and then chooses really advantageous strategic passes and delivers them in a way that allows the teammates to move forward. So it's the communicating with the pass, the way he plays it into the right feet, into the space in front of them when they need to have space to move forwards. It's the way he executes his passes and dribbles is basically fantastic. It's fantastic to watch. So he certainly deserves to be there for me. Man United's Henrik Mkhitaryan is another. He, again, is like the positions he takes up to create dynamics in the final third, the way he combines and links with players, combines this with his own ability to beat players and to create things out of nothing. And also another really unique element about him is the way he approaches defensive situations and the angles he approaches defenders from, his ability to win the ball back. He really has a unique set of attributes. So,
all right, I would say we wrap it up for our premiere episode. We would like to apologize for the technical difficulties that occurred. We will be back in a few weeks. There's always a football match going on somewhere on the planet, and also think about the top-notch teams of the sport. Contest Chelsea will make their first steps, Leverkusen and Dortmund try to battle Bayern for the title, and the Serie A could again be terrorized by a superior Juventus. Enough fodder for many episodes in the foreseeable future. You can find our first episode on SoundCloud, we will work things out in regards to iTunes and such like. Maybe we even start a Patreon account, who knows? Maybe people actually want to pay to listen to us. Let us know if that's the case, @spielfaircom on Twitter. I would like to say thank you, gentlemen. Thank you to Mr. Tom Payne. He's @TomPayneFTBL on Twitter. Also, thank you to Judah Davies. He's @1415football on Twitter. And thank you to you, our listeners, for sticking with us. For now, we are out.